Welcome along to The Short Ball. It's a Rugby Pass podcast with Scotty Stevenson and Mills. Millsy, I know a little bit later on The Short Ball you're going to get into me about my shit predictions for the weekend, and that's fine too. Because I understand that you love lording it over me when it comes to how bad I am at picking scores.
I'm surprised you've brought it up.
No, you're not surprised at all. And you can probably hear a bit of noise in the background because today on The Short Ball we thought we'd start with some Mitre 10 Cup. It's also Wahine Round in New Zealand, celebrating 125 years of women's suffrage. For those of you who don't have a thesaurus, that's not women's suffering, that's suffrage. That's a very different thing. Producer Alice is in the hot seat as always. Morning to you, Alice.
Good morning.
You're looking rosy, sparkly, you're looking ready to roll.
I'm so ready to roll. I'm feeling good today.
Damn straight. Yeah, everyone's excited. And the man on the phone's excited too because this man started his career as an 88 kilogram open side flanker, trying to take down 120 kg monsters. And provincial and super rugby, played for the Highlanders, played for the Hurricanes, played for the Lions. He's had more clubs than Captain Caveman, took his rugby career north to the Leicester Tigers, and in 2009 pulled the pin on his playing career. Since then has been building himself as a wandering vagabond coach and has taken him to many a continent and many a place. Ben Herring, head coach of Otago, welcome to The Short Ball, my friend.
Thanks so much. Pleasure to be part of it, mate.
Do you know, Benny, I used to love watching you go around on a playing field because, let's be honest, and not much has changed. There wasn't much of you in those days, but boy, oh boy, you were brave.
I think when you said 88 kilos, that was dripping wet, mate, in the southern weather. I wouldn't have been much more than that at all, I don't think.
I don't think you were. And
he did actually play for Southend, didn't he?
Yeah.
You had a stint for Southend, didn't you?
I did, yeah. It was the start of it all, actually. Just you, me and Harley Teepole and Hoga Miller used to drive down for training and drive back straight afterwards three times a week. It's fantastic.
The amazing thing is, here you are playing in a team alongside Paul Hoga Miller, who would have been literally twice your size, Benny.
I tell you what, that was an eye-opener all round, Sumo. Rooming with Oge. There's a reason why he's called Ogre, and you room with him and you find out why.
Ben, I want to talk coaching with you today because I know I had a chat with you a month or so ago down in Dunedin, and it made a big impact on me because I love the way you look at life, and I think you and I have some similarities when it comes to our point of view about the sport and about the importance of things outside of the sport. But I want to take you back to your playing days at Leicester and what happened between you pulling the pin as a player and starting this journey as a coach.
Look, Sumo, well, I gave it pretty much zero thought. I never intended to be a coach. I actually intended to be more of a travelling vagabond, like you said. We had, me and my wife had plans to get a combi van and just tour America for years. And then Richard Cockerell asked me to stay on as assistant coach and just to be skills and contact. And I just loved it, mate. There's something about it hooked me in. And it wasn't necessarily the rugby. It was just the ability you can have to affect people in bigger ways. And I really like that side of the coaching. I love the people element, the personal element, the relationship building, the environment. That's what I love about coaching, and that's what hooked me from day one, really.
Ben, but there is an element of coaching, though, that can become frustrating, I would imagine. The fact, you know, obviously you go through a little bit of adversity when you aren't quite performing, obviously, as a player. You know, when you're out there, you can physically do something. How did you sort of get your head around, I suppose, motivating guys to actually go out there and implement the things that you wanted them to implement with all this pressure of, hopefully sort of winning? Well, not hopefully, you know, but going out there to win.
Yeah. Oh, look, I think when you're dealing with individuals, you've got to understand the individual a little bit personally. So everyone's different. Everyone has different motivators. So it's about doing your best to try tap into what motivates each person individually. And some guys, it's the love, and some guys, it's the stick. And it's just trying to nail which is which. The most challenging guys are the guys you can't quite read or you're not quite sure of. And then you just sort of have, you know, try a style and see how it goes. And then think, oh, gee, no, I won't do that again. That was horrendous. But just giving that... for me, I really enjoy about coaching. It's sort of a profession where you get critiqued almost daily on your what you've done, what you've said, what you've delivered. Not many office jobs or any other jobs, you get sort of that daily critique by 30 people plus people watching who don't even know you're critiquing you. And I really like that. I think it's good for your own soul, and if you can weather it, it grows you as a person really well.
There was something about the Kiwis who headed up to Leicester the same time you did, Ben. There was Aaron Major, Craig Newby. I know Scotty Hamilton came up a little bit later, but you know, Aaron's now a head coach based in the same stadium as you guys at Forsyth Bay with the Highlanders. Newbs is still coaching away up in the UK. Was there something about that group of Kiwis at that particular time in Leicester, which was a very successful time for the club, that you identified then potentially that you would go on to be coaches to retain an involvement in the game?
No, I think we're all too busy with Craig Newby organised the Kibworth Beer Club, which operated fortnightly. We had to bring a different beer to everybody else. So I created a good buzz, but in terms of coaching, I think Aaron was always destined to be a coach. He's bloody talented with his rugby knowledge. The rest of us, have just sort of stumbled in it. Well, that's what I have. But it was a particularly good crew in the little village we lived in Leicester there, so we're lucky with that. It was great.
Yeah, Odeby. It was a hell of a town. A great village cricket team too, if I remember rightly too, Ben Herring.
Oh, the Wednesday night league sumo was absolutely fantastic. They had a $1 million club for a team of social players. It was fantastic.
That's what we like about the English countryside. Now, Ben, you've had a remarkable coaching career, really, for someone who fell into it. You've coached Leicester, inarguably one of the super clubs of the UK, if not Europe. You've coached in Japan with NEC alongside Greg Cooper. You've coached at the Sunwolves alongside some other luminaries in a pretty challenging environment. You're back now with Otago. I mean, these are all big clubs, big jobs, mate. Was this ever on your horizon, even at the start of your career, thinking to yourself, this is going to take me through Japan, this is going to take me to Canada, this is going to take me back to New Zealand?
Well, Sumo, I did have my sort of 10-year plan of where I wanted to get to. And so I made a point as soon as I got the bug for coaching that I wanted to push myself as early as possible. And I thought the best way to do that is just throw yourself into the most challenging environments that I could. And so first on the radar after Leicester was go to Japan, just because you have to learn coaching to guys that don't speak the same language as you. So you have to be able to simplify and shorten everything down. And for me, that was an amazing coaching experience early on. So that's the plan, mate. I wanted to move around. I didn't want to get bogged down into any one way of coaching or thinking that any one way was the right way. I was really keen just to expand as much as I could, as quick as I could. So hence the reason for so much moving around early on. And I think it's really helped me grow as a coach and as a person too, I think. Mm.
Ben, you're back now, obviously, in Otago. I mean, we all know how physically the individual and the player has changed over the years. You've spoken about man management and things like that. How, in your opinion, how has the players sort of, from a mental point of view, these days changed compared to the days that you were playing?
Well, firstly, down Dunedin, I think from when we were playing, like Carisbrook was known as a pretty horrible place to play because it was wet and cold and... Yeah. You played when people came down here, they're expecting that. Now they expect hard and fast, which is, that's changed quite a bit, changed the dynamic of Otago rugby. Look, certainly my 10 level, you're getting guys sort of that under 23 level that are just on the start of their path for professional rugby. Mm. So a lot of the guys we're seeing are actually really, really super motivated. They're seeing rugby as a genuine career option, and you're getting guys that are pretty focused from a pretty young age. I think some of the schoolboy programs are very professional, and a lot of players come out of that with some pretty serious intent on being a professional rugby player. And sometimes we're just down here particularly, we're really conscious that we want to grow the man as well, or the person as well, and so making sure that whilst you want to be focusing on rugby, you've still got to be a balanced guy. You've got to have outside interests. You've got to have other stuff you enjoy, things that take you away from rugby. We don't want to be one-trick ponies down here, so we're trying to grow the bigger man, and I think it's important that that's part of the Mitre 10 sort of philosophy, because ultimately, if you don't go on, you need something else.
Finally, Ben, today, mate, we know you're a little different, and we celebrate that about you, but outside of rugby, what presses your buttons?
Sermo, well, a little bit like yourself, mate. I enjoy the odd little bit of writing here and there. Mm-hmm. I enjoy writing books.
Writing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, like, sort of, nice. One of my, if I wasn't, as soon as the rugby season finishes and all my duties here, my love would be to get up in the morning, go have a coffee in a cafe and just sit and write for a couple of hours and bang something out, either just a story for the kids or something a bit more heavy duty for the likes of you, Sumo.
Because you're a fan of the horror for your kids, aren't you? Blood and gore all around in the Herring household.
Mate, I cringe when the kids tell stories back to other kids that I've told them and they don't leave any of the details out. I'm like, oh, geez. Easy on, fellas.
It's a bit ropey, but you keep being you. Ben Herring, head coach of Otago. Good luck for the weekend too, mate, up against Canterbury. Always a big challenge for the boys. I'm sure they'll be up for it.
It's one of those games you don't need too much motivation at our end for that, so yeah. The boys will be fizzing.
Awesome to chat as always, buddy. Keep in touch, mate.
Thanks, Sumo. Thanks, Mills.
Good on you, mate.
Thanks, Ben. Ben Herring there joining the short ball this morning. I really like Ben. For a long time, I've really admired him. And I remember heading up to Leicester myself in 2009, shooting some stories around the UK with Kiwi rugby players up there. And even then, Ben just had this unique outlook on life. Mm. Rugby was what it was to him, but you could always tell he's a seeker.
Yeah.
He's always looking for answers, different answers. He's trying to find solutions to problems that others maybe just haven't found. I know he's a season ticket holder at the local theatre in Dunedin. He loves it. He's got a creative space himself, an office in Dunedin where he can go and he can paint, he can write, he can put on his pink pants and do whatever he likes. He's got a wonderful family. His wife's a nutritionist. She's also an author. And they just have a great balance outside of the game. And I think so many people could learn from Ben that, yes, we're all passionate about the sport, and when you're in it, as you were for a long time, Millsy, it's all-consuming. Mm. But if Ben teaches us anything as a coach, I think it's that whole notion of turn up to work, do your job, but don't stress about it 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Because that's not healthy. It's not good for anyone.
No, it's not. And it's interesting you mention all those things about him, because it's often reflective of the way he played. He was almost thinking about the next thing. He was so energetic about playing. And it's great to see that he has that enthusiasm about life as well, and also a balance. It is interesting, and I love the way he's talked about a balance in life and making sure they grow the man. And that was kind of, you hear all these things about the young player. They're so driven to become All Blacks or professional rugby players. He said, we didn't quite have that. There wasn't so many of us younger players back then that had that sort of drive. Now, that day, just everyone wants to be that. But you've got to have a balance. I remember, I think they did a story on Jack Goodhue, and he spoke about his belief in that rugby wasn't everything, that you've got to have a balance in life and everything like that. And it is so crucial because it does, when you go out and play and you don't have a bad day, you've always got something to fall back on, something that's going to make you happy. And obviously with Ben, he's done that. I mean, to even life sort of changes and your goals change. One minute he's playing, didn't want to be a coach, didn't think about being a coach. Yeah. All of a sudden he's on this 10-year path of being a coach, and it's taken him everywhere, and he's loving it. And I just love what he spoke about, the off-the-field sort of thing and also critiquing, because it's such a hard thing for a coach. I don't think I could actually, part of me, if I was being critiqued by a player that I was then looking to try and pick, and he went a step too far, that pen of mine has just gone straight through his name. And it's such a hard skill. And man, management is massive in coaching.
But the best leaders, and a coach is a leader, are people who can take feedback and understand. We both know Graham Henry very, very well, and he'd be the first to say that his style of coaching in the 70s and 80s was not working for him in the 90s and 2000s.
Yeah.
And he had to start to listen to that feedback in order to make sure that he remained as a head coach and where he wanted to be. We all have to listen to that in life, and some people have got justifiable ideas. I've got a cold.
Have you?
Let me just cough that out.
Wow.
It's better now.
But yeah, I mean, to go back to that, I mean, I had a real good conversation with Leon McDonald and I spoke to him about, you know, coming up here and sort of what his inspirations were and sort of, you know, he had an opportunity to go over to Australia. One thing that he pointed out in Aussie is they don't actually send their coaches away to actually get,
professional development.
Yeah, they don't. Mm. They don't. Whereas he goes, the pathway in New Zealand is fantastic. You know, they send you over to different environments, whether it be rugby league, NFL, things like that. Whereas Australia, they just don't do that. I was surprised by that.
I think that's the thing about New Zealand coaches. You know, I'm not going to compare them to other coaches, but from what I know of New Zealand coaches, they're always looking for things. Wow. You know, Scotty Robertson, I know for a fact, has been up in the States recently. I know that Brad Moore, his assistant, is always looking outside of rugby for solutions. And I know a lot of the other guys do as well. The All Blacks last year visited the Marines, the Navy, the West Point Military Academy, all looking for ways to not to play rugby.
Different, yeah.
Looking at ways to organise their leadership. And the structure of their leadership, and that's what you've got to keep doing. You've got to keep evolving the sport, and I know Ben, I know Ben's going to be at the forefront of that. Mm. In some way or another, he will always have a role to play in the sport because I think we're lucky to have people like that who are not afraid to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
If we homogenise, then we risk our game.
10 years ago, that wouldn't have happened though.
He would be too out there as he is.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact, Ben and I have spoken about this before, Ben's pulled back a lot of his, what's a bit more off the wall characteristics, because he knows that in New Zealand you can't always be out there.
Yeah, so he's adapted.
So you've got to come back a little bit and try and be a part of this society and the mores of this society. But there it is, Ben Herring and some chat on coaching today on the short ball. We move on to... Well, I guess the continuing fallout from last weekend, Millsy, you were there at the Caketon in Wellington. I thought it was a miracle, nothing short of a miracle, that the Springboks won that game. And let me just explain that, not because they didn't deserve to win that. It's just because I have never seen numbers that lopsided where the team on the wrong side of those numbers has come out with a victory, especially against a side like the All Blacks. Look, sum it up for me. What did you see? How did this happen?
Man, I seen there was always going to be spirit, you know, there was always going to be inspiration to get up and play against the All Blacks, considering the last two defeats. That was always going to happen. Mm. But what amazed me is they didn't have the best start. Pollard kicked dead. They defended for a long time, two tries against them. Mm-hmm. But to claw their way back, and I know, you know, there's a lot of talk about, the All Blacks still could have won that at the end of the day, but you've got to admire the passion that these guys, that the South Africans showed. And then all of a sudden they got, Dante, when he scored, I mean, when he went through that in goal and he stepped, that there showed to me there's a team now who is just lifted, because you don't just go over there and try and step your way to underneath the post.
That's right.
And that gave them energy. It gave them motivation. All of a sudden you're starting to see Willie LaRue starting to get vocal, and they just sort of lifted to what we all know that they can do. And then all of a sudden the All Blacks were put under a bit of pressure. Yeah, I know they got themselves to a stage where they could have won the game and perhaps should have, but for me, the team that won definitely deserved to win on that day.
So the most points South Africa's already ever put on New Zealand, on New Zealand soil, most tries they've ever scored against them in New Zealand. So there are a lot of issues here. Straight after the game, we were focused really on the last 20 seconds and how on earth 3 points was not good enough. And there's some competing theories on this, one of which, if you take a shot for drop goal and you miss it, the game's over. Yeah. But I find that it's not good logic, that. Because if you pass the ball and someone drops it, the game's over too, as we found out. So you're set in that position. The one thing I will say before we cover off some other angles on this game, I thought the ghosts of All Blacks' past were gone. I thought, and that's what the world has been convinced of, and that is what the All Blacks themselves have tried to convince the world of, that all of those moments where the composure wasn't there, where the panic set in, based on the fact that they've won the last two Rugby World Cups, that's all a thing of the past. Well, I am sorry, That's not what I saw on Saturday night, because I saw all of that come back to haunt the All Blacks in a crucial moment, yep. behind on the count, and it was one escape too many for this team.
Yeah.
And you're right, they got themselves in a position to win it and didn't take it. Someone said to me, well, there was nothing on it. Well, there was something on it.
Yeah.
That was the rugby championship wrapped up right there. So a trophy was on that game. Mm. It was a team coming from behind, all sorts of pressure, a game plan that wasn't coming off. And we have seen this story before.
Mm.
And I think you've got to be concerned. Yes, absolutely. Credit South Africa with a staunchly stoic, unbelievably heroic performance in Wellington. But you still got to look at this team and say, what up?
Yeah.
With it.
Yeah, and you're right. I was sort of reminiscent of, you know, back in 2007 and things like that, you know, having been involved, the fact that, you know, why wasn't this just drop goal, everything. And a little bit of that has to do with your confidence as well. If you're prepared to chance your arm, and we've seen it time and time again, the All Blacks build pressure, and then all of a sudden they score. So there is that element that they actually can believe that they can get to that stage. But I suppose, you know, in the weekend, in hindsight's a good thing, you know, there were many opportunities to sit back in the pocket and have a crack, whether they were confident enough to do it, whether they had a plan, but it just almost sort of re-earthed all that sort of...
So you felt it?
I kind of, when I looked at it, I was kind of like, wow, what's going on here, man? They're just, well, should we wait for a penalty? I mean, it was right. Kind of like, well, Damien McKenzie's out there. But when it became evident they were actually starting to drop pill, when they dropped pill 5 metres out, and this was probably about 10 minutes to go, you kind of got the feeling, well, this is one of those nights that they're not going to build pressure and be able to score. I think it's a good thing. I mean, South African rugby, you know, we spoke about how inconsistent they are. Their challenge now is to make sure they build on this. You know, with All Black rugby, well, they needed something like this to actually... although they don't go out to purposely lose, you know, they'll go back and reflect on how this happened, how were they put under pressure by that much, and how they let, you know, a great start like that. I mean, the last time they started that well was against the Lions in Wellington, and they ended up losing that game. Yeah, I know they were down one man, but I think it's a good thing.
No, I'm not arguing that. I'm not arguing that. But I mean, we need to come to some conclusion on whether this is an anomaly or whether there was something structurally involved in that game or systemic within the All Blacks at the moment which led to that result. And I know that we are looking at it from an All Black point of view because we're sitting in an office in Auckland, New Zealand, and that team represents this country. But is it a defensive failing? Is it all down to Baden Barrett's goal kicking? Or is it a combination of all of those things, Mills, and it's too simplistic to point to one thing over another? Do you just look at it holistically and say, every little element of the game was slightly off?
Yeah, I think exactly that. You could focus on one thing. You could say, well, 6-5, Baden Barrett missed a couple of kicks, end of game, we win. But, or you could focus on the fact we started so well, or, you know, little things didn't, you know, the pass from Geordie could have easily gone the other way. We shouldn't have done that, probably tightened things up a bit. You can focus on anything you want to, but I think it just didn't happen and didn't have the feel. Particularly after they started so well, they just sort of went off the ball a little bit, you know. It just, I mean, and you got to remember a lot of those, I mean, we harp on about, you know, those guys have been rested and they're coming back into the fold. This is a good learning, you know. Is this the way the All Blacks now think, well, we've had guys that haven't played for a whole week, they come back into the to start and, well, and play.
It's sensibly 2 weeks, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it was, yeah. And so that's a learning for them. And so we shouldn't panic about things like that. I think, you know, they'll go away and think, well, is that detrimental to us, you know, progressing when we get to the bigger stuff later on in Japan? So it's a great learning, stage of learning for the All Black camp.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of, a lot of cerebral minutes spent thinking about their rest and rotation policy with the All Black side, and especially coming into next year through Super Rugby, because I don't know if the 1 week on, 1 week off thing is working for them. I don't know if resting players for certain games and bringing them back and thinking, right, they'll be ready to go, is working right now. We've seen it through Super Rugby when coaches be forced to rest and then players are expected to come back the next week and just pick up where they left off. That 2 weeks out of game time, and when you're in the momentum of a season, I think does have an impact on players.
Well,
and you've got to balance that up against the workload.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the hardest part, is about the workload. I mean, you look at uncharacteristic sort of kickoff on from Bowden Barrett. You know, you've gone. He's a player that racked up off four tries against Australia.
Yeah, 30 points in his last outing, right?
Yeah, he has a week off, and then he comes back, and then he's. I've never seen him kick drop kicks off like that, you know, and sort of he just didn't quite get that rhythm back into his game. And so perhaps this is something that the All Blacks look at and say, well, when we do get to the Rugby World Cup, you know, this is how we perhaps will try and attack things to make sure players are consistent in there. There's enough fluency in their play and they're comfortable there. Yes, and it sucks that they lost, but I'd rather be sitting here talking about this now than after next year when you're thinking another four damn years, right?
Sure, four more years. Well, you've been there. Nah. Warren Whiteley. Okay, I'm gonna talk about Warren Whiteley because now Warren's not your modern day crash the ball up number eight hard runner, but there's one thing that summed up that Springbok performance for me. Warren Whiteley pulling TJ Perenara down 5 metres out from the try line. I don't know how he did it. I don't know what possessed him. I don't know what spirit was running through the man. And I know he's a deeply faithful man. But, oh my God, it was a singular moment of desperation that, to me, said everything you need to know about what Russie is trying to do with this team and what the leadership has imparted upon this team in terms of what that jersey means again. And the spirit was there in Peter Steph Dutoy's tears. It was there in Fuff. I don't even know what Fuff de Klerk was doing. He was dry humping a man on the ground. But he was like a little horny Bichon Frise going to town. And I loved it. Don't get me wrong.
It was awesome.
Fuff can celebrate as much as he wants. I thought Fuff had a great game. He was unreal. But that desperation is what it takes.
Yeah, I don't want to play this down. He did have a good angle on him, and sometimes you get caught on that, but you've still got to have the determination to get back and actually, well, give yourself a chance. And he stopped it. That was a try-saving tackle, and the fact that it was probably a game winner, you know. And so those guys, the Lucys for me were the guys that really stood up, because I was a little bit concerned going into that, because Sia Khaleesi was being huge over the championship, but then, you know, Whiteley and
Steph Dutoy,
they had huge games. And you think of the opposition that they were up against, you know, Sam Kane, Kieran Reid, and Squire, and so they have those three there that I just spoke about have probably more of a balance. You know, one can run, they can all get over the ball, they can all defend. There was massive heat on these Lucys in the South African team, and they just stood up. And that's why. I mean, you look at the emotion that they showed after the game. They just, you know, it was just huge. It was great to see, you can just sense that, you know, that whole belief that Springboks have got in your camp right now. I just hope that they can build on this, Sumo. Like, I know it's still early days, and you know, yes, they can celebrate their win for now, but I'd hate for them to go back to Pretoria, and then actually they got the Australians first, right? And then sort of take a step back. You know, they need to keep building on this. You know, get back to the way South African rugby used to be.
They can do it, mate. They can do it. Whew, that's intense. Let's get back to local stuff here on the Short Ball, Millsy. Mitre 10 cut, you right?
Good, mate.
I thought you did a really good job there.
Oh, gee.
Not that you don't always. Oh. Just you've really summed that up. Alice, your thoughts?
Yeah, that was great.
What are you writing? Why are you writing?
I'm just writing notes. I have to do a little description of the pod, a little sum up. Geez. So.
Description, okay.
Yeah.
You get some tough jobs.
Guess you guys never read that then.
No.
It's always really good.
Have you ever read that?
I didn't even know you did that.
Wow. Thanks, Alice. There's unsung hero of this podcast.
Yeah, she is.
Millsy, Mitre 10 Cup this week, still to come. Northland taking on Southland. The poor old Stags, boy. We might have to put our oyster crayfish bit on this.
Where's it being played?
Do you want to get this out of the way before we move on? Do you want to get it out of the way?
Yeah.
Do you want to get it out of the way?
It's up north, isn't it, too?
It's in Tunny
Fun. I lost two dozen oysters last year.
I know you did. Do you want to go again?
Oh, I have to.
Yeah, you do. You kind of do, actually. What is it? Two dozen oysters?
You don't get it until next year.
Is it one crayfish or two crayfish?
Oh, two.
Two crays.
Come on, mate. Come on, mate.
Okay, two crays and a box of McLeod's Longboard Lager.
I'm
prepared to put that up. That's my stakes. I'll put that up against your two dozen oysters.
Do you want something else?
No.
You want some powers?
No, I don't want the power.
Can it?
No, Pa was terrible the day after. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
And oh. No, I'm not eating kina.
Spates?
I'm bagia.
Oh, yeah.
This is it. You know, it's a Palangi test, eh? Then they offer you the kina first. You turn it down. You don't get to the oysters. That's what happens. Always the kina comes out first. I'll never forget Jamie Joseph winning the 2015 Super Rugby Championship with the Highlanders. And there he is sitting in the lobby of the team hotel at the Intercontinental. And what's he celebrating with? A punnet of kina and a glass of Moet.
Oh, yeah.
That is living the life.
Yeah, boy. Yeah.
That's a sea urchin, for those of you listening to the pod outside of New Zealand. For those of you in New Zealand, you know kina.
Kina.
Pity eats too much kina. Pity weapon. He eats a lot of kina.
I'm going to refrain, mate.
Stop. Bay of Plenty taking on Waikato. It's a Chiefs Country Cup battle. You'd have to pick Waikato. Should we talk about the Mulus?
Man.
What a changer. I know what's happened here. First game of the season. Getting dusted up, and Jono Gibbs has just said enough.
That's it.
He's literally just walked in the change room and with a single word has said enough, and that was enough. And have they turned a corner?
Man.
The Mulu men.
Unbelievable, eh?
Holders of the shield, and now with a chance to go across to Rotorua and beat up on the Bay, who are looking pretty handy themselves, except they went down to Hawke's Bay last week. But
Manta Harbour, didn't they? Yeah. They're in the storm, eh? Yeah.
Yep.
Oh.
Yep. What do you think? Waikato?
Oh, I think just that. I think Batesy mentioned it on Team Talk the other day. I think that the fact that obviously Jono's, that first game, trying to get new players in, really young squad.
Mm-hmm.
But also the fact that now they're starting to get used to each other, and then they go and win the they beat Wellington at home, go on and win the Shield.
Did that game? I couldn't believe what I was watching that day.
It was unreal. Yeah, defend it. And now they're just, Sevu Reese, how good is he?
Sevu Reese is a freak show.
Man, I mean Dwayne Sweeney.
We got to get him out of his contract. Today, what's he up to? Going to Ireland.
Yeah, no, mate.
He ain't going to fit in Galway.
Mate.
He hardly fits in Hamilton.
There's horizontal rain there, bro.
Yeah, you've been to Galway.
Oh, great people, though.
Yeah, I'm not doubting that. We spoke to Ben Herring about Otago Canterbury. Canterbury be the favourites, but the machine's not as oiled as we've become accustomed to, is it? The Canterbury machine. No. This could be an ambush from the big Goldo.
It could be.
Do you sniff an ambush here?
I don't know.
You're still back in Canterbury, I know. You're all bitten.
Well, you've got to remember. How good was that game? How was the Aucklanders?
We were just getting to that because they got Taranaki, and Taranaki's in a world of hurt themselves. They have gone from holders of the shield, potential premiership contenders, to I don't know where they're at right now. Tay Walden's still running great lines. Mm. They've got great loose forward trio. Some people saying not getting in the muck stuff enough. Angus Tartvel, the loss of him, looks like it's cost them just in leadership alone. But there's something just not firing in the Naki.
Yeah, there's no lack of them trying. They've got Crosby and all that. They're running hard, Hoyata, even Walden and co. But they just seem to be sort of doing it individually. That's what's sort of evident. That there's no real flow in their game, and perhaps it's having lost Angus and a bit of direction to say, hey, let's just keep things tight. Mm. Because their set piece was awesome. They've been awesome over the last few weeks. All of a sudden, you lose a bit of confidence. Riccatelli's not hitting the mark. And, you've got to remember, Riccatelli's there too. So they've got a wealth of experience. Oh,
Sugi Naholo, Tay Walden. Yeah, and you name it.
That's a great team.
Oh, they got Auckland, and Auckland top of the pops. Wow, the blue and white hoops. Mills is back. Look at you smiling away. It's back to where it all began, eh?
Oh, you asked me. You asked me at the beginning of the Mitre 10.
What did you say? I don't
know. Whether I'd go to Southland, where I'm supporting Southland this year, or Auckland. You asked me that question.
And what did you say?
Did you remember that, producer Alice?
What?
No. Yeah, didn't. That happened.
And what did he say?
Oh, I can't remember.
You need to go back to the archives.
That's the more crucial part of this equation. What did you say?
I said Auckland.
You did not.
I did.
You did not.
I want you to go and find that.
I'll dig it up and I'll cut it in here.
We agreed on terms. It was where you were from, not where you grew up. You were from.
Did I? Oh.
You had to go to the Stags. The winless Stags, may I add.
You can't, you can't force me onto the Stags now.
You're from.
When I said I'm going for the Aucklanders, I hope so. I hope they said that.
I'm Ellis.
Well, have I got a selective memory?
Alice, you've got to find this.
Find it, Alice. Yeah.
Someone out there in shortball land will know what you said. Push comes to shove, you've got to pick one.
I'm going Auckland.
I'm okay with you going for Auckland, but it means you've turned your back on the province of your birth.
Hey, I didn't say I turned my back.
That's exactly what you said.
I didn't say that. I just
you cannot you cannot choose your Mitre 10 Cup team. It is where you are from. It's mate, how many painful years have I been through with the Taniwha? How many times have we been in a position to win a game only to lose it beautifully or spectacularly?
I admire that.
I've lived in Auckland longer than I lived in Northland.
I admire that, and the fact what made me turn was you made me do the song last year, and I went out of my way to act absolutely ridiculous on that.
I didn't make you do the song. You gladly agreed to do the song for Southland, for the province of your youth.
I did.
For your home.
Yes, I did. But that was what swung me towards the Aucklanders. It was...
What, you embarrassed yourself?
I was disgusted at myself.
Why are you embarrassed?
I did a bit of dancing.
Started dancing. All you had to do was mouth the words for the team song. You put in the dance moves.
I got right into it. So I was...
What? So because you humiliated yourself?
I want to put this straight. I'm not turning my back on the Southlanders.
Oh, now we're not turning... But, really?
The Mitre, your question.
Bluff Oyster season, you're straight back down there.
Your question was, who am I actually going to support this year? And I answered the Aucklanders.
Because they've
won five in a row, you can't now tell me I can't support them.
I'm not saying you cannot support Auckland. What I'm saying to you is you can't just come and support Auckland now they're winning.
That's offensive, mate.
Well, you know.
Producer Alice, I would like you to find.
No, Producer Alice is not here to do your dirty work for you. You know what you said.
Go the mighty seagulls.
Right. From my suffering to suffrage, it is Wahine Round, Millsy and the Fazza Pazza. I love the Fazza Pazza. It's off the charts at the moment. It's amazing. It is amazing. Speaking of Farah Palmer Cup producer's trying to call you.
Yeah.
Right. We have to get back to him.
It is. The thing is for me, if you don't turn up to absolutely play, if you're the top dogs, and mate, you are going to get dealt to. Yep. You've seen it. Look at Wellington beating Canterbury. Counties losing to Waikato, Manawatu beating Auckland. Yep. Well, not just beating them, but... absolutely winning convincingly. And so, man, it's huge, isn't it?
The top four teams in the Premiership separated by 2 points.
Yep.
Canterbury, Counties, Manukau, Manawatu and Waikato. And the top four teams in the Championship separated by 2 points. Wellington, North Harbour, Otago and Hawke's Bay. It's insane. Two yellow cards last week for hits that put women on stretchers. I mean, you want to talk about... We don't talk about tough nuts. This is an insane competition. I don't mean to dwell on the nasty stuff, but, mate, there are some lives being extinguished out there. Seriously. Oh. Women getting melted.
Oh, huge.
It's awesome.
Oh, it's
and some of the tries are off the charts.
Yeah, and really well-constructed stuff as well. It's not like, you get the odd, someone that's just in beast mode and just sort of running over people. But then... really nice, set up, and everyone working off the ball hard and things like that too. But it's crazy, isn't it? Do they need the championship? Why can't they just have the
right
far out?
I don't know why they need the championship. I'd love to see a round robin.
Yeah,
imagine that, 12 teams in a round robin.
Yeah,
it'd be like a proper Super Rugby competition.
Mm.
That would be amazing. I think you need divisions just to sort out, because remember the Taranaki Whio have just come back into the competition this year. Hawke's Bay only 2 years in, so you've got to build up. Auckland last week, they put 86 points on Tasman in a record-breaking scoreline, and then the following week they lose to the Counties Manukau Heat, who the first week their captain was saying they need to get off the McDonald's. I mean, that is a turnaround. Also, another record will be set this week. Four live broadcasts of Farah Palmer Cup rugby this weekend. We start with Bay of Plenty take on Taranaki. I think the Bay will be too good there, given their wealth of talent. Leslie Elder.
Yeah.
Leslie Ketu last week came off the bench and went absolutely apeshit. far out, she's tough.
But that's the thing, like someone like that coming off the bench, and then it just opens things up, doesn't it? I mean, it's kind of like we talk about talent in terms of the Mitre 10 Cup, but man, there is some talented woman.
Oh, the Fazer Paz, absolutely. The game I'm looking forward to is probably Manawatu Canterbury. Manawatu without Salika Winiata, who
she's not playing.
No. She unfortunately had to get stretched off after being head high in one of the great coat-hangers of all time last weekend. But she was all right. 10 minutes later, she bounced back to her feet and probably tried to taser whoever it was who hit her high. But I wouldn't mess with that cop, eh? I would not mess with Salika Winiata. That's going to be a good game. So Manawatu hosting that one in Palmerston North. And also the other one, Waikato Auckland. I mean, the Storm are going to find a way. I cannot understand the Storm's reversal last week.
Yeah, it's weird. They're sort of hot and cold. And now they travel to Taupiri, where Waikato won against Counties Manuka. So
So Waikato hold the Chiefs Country Cup too. So they've gone undefeated against all their Chiefs rivals so far this season. Sasoli Talawandua and Chelsea Ellie, I think the two really holding that team together. Yep. Great experience. Chelsea Ellie's, I think, a really underrated player at this level.
Mm.
She didn't get a lot of chances with the Black Ferns and is still sort of building minutes with the Black Ferns. But you put her in a Waikato jersey, she has been the architect, really, for me, of what they've achieved so far this year.
While leading as well, leading from, you know, the pivot position. And so that's absolutely crucial. You notice that when they go back to their provinces, they almost step up another level and actually sort of take on the responsibility. And certainly in her case, she's done that. And you know, considering the youth that they've got there, she's doing a great job at that too.
Now, Millsy, I promised you'd get your chance here on the short ball before we wrap up. Do you want to come at me about my prediction around Australia, Argentina?
Terrible, mate, aren't you?
I'm getting shit for it on Twitter too.
Shit, mate, you won't be getting any T-bone steaks in Argentina next time you visit. Terrible, mate. Terrible. Good on you, Argies. Old Argie Bargies, mate. Good on you.
As I said at the time, if Australia does lose, they're in a world of hurt. So they're in a world of hurt.
Yeah,
it's a half-empty stadium in Robina, followed by a fracas with a fan.
That's a loss
to the Pumas. That's where we're at there. Seriously, they've got to blow it up and start again. Come on, you can't beat South Africa 1 week and lose to the Pumas. Enough.
Yeah, well, this is okay. And I don't want to keep blowing smoke up the ABs, but this is why this competition needs to be, well, the teams need to like stand up. South Africa, you can't lose to Australia and then come here and beat New Zealand. Australia can't beat the Springboks and then lose to the Pumas.
You mean we've got a competition?
The All Blacks just.
You don't need that down in the Southern Hemisphere. You don't need a competition. You just want one-way traffic. That's what we want down here. The water going down the toilet that way and one-way traffic. I got to cough again. That's been the short ball. God, this cold will never go away. We'll catch you next week.
Ciao.